Hello and welcome to the first podcast for Historics of the year 2023.
Live.
Hello.
Hello.
So I have with me expert of all things auctions, Matthew Priddy.
Hello everybody.
And YouTuber and car expert Tom Exton.
Okay, you've been very kind there. Thank you.
Right, we are currently at the London Classic Car Show at Olympia, and it is basically a three-day fun fest of all things classic cars, and Historics is having its first auction here as well. What have we got on offer?
And what haven't we got on offer? So it's over 100 cars from a No Reserve Morris 1100 all the way up to a DB5 nestled just behind us there. So, and all in between, including two Dinos. It is a really fun-packed auction.
Yeah, it
and
is.
Busy, very busy.
Yeah, wonderfully busy, wonderfully busy. And we have the auction, which starts at 12 o'clock tomorrow, that's Saturday. So if you can come down and bid on the cars, or you can do it online, that would be lovely. So coming up in this particular podcast then, we suggest which Porsche 911 is the best. And I think we're going to argue, disagree, or maybe even agree to disagree. I don't know.
Not sure on that one.
Fighting talk will come. We also take you on a whistle top tour.
Easy for you to say.
It is, isn't it? Whistle stop tour of what's going on at the Classic Car Show. And we also look into the future of fuels. How are we going to run our classic cars? And could it be banana skin and beer like the DeLorean in Back to the Future?
Who knows?
You've seen that film, haven't you, Tom?
I've seen all the films, the good ones.
Yeah. And then we end things off with a quiz. So I try and outwit the boys with a quiz on questions that I quite frankly make up as we go along.
It's not really trying, normally it's successfully just outwitting us, let's be honest.
So are we all ready?
Ready?
Yes.
So what have you been up to in the last couple of months, really, since the last pod?
I went on holiday thinking we'd have a nice quiet year. And then someone in their infinite wisdom thought we'd put an auction on early on in the year in February at Olympia. So I've been literally charging around, seeing everyone's classic cars, picking my heads into people's garages, going to storage units and all sorts to have a look at what's good and beautiful to consign for this show.
So how does the consignment process work? Say I've got a car to sell, I ring you up and say...
It can work two ways. A lot of people ring us, obviously, based on us being nice and prominent in the marketplace, to give us a call for our advice. We would then tend to go and see the car to give the first initial part of the advice. This is the value. And if the value is agreeable to yourself, then obviously at that point we've got something to move forward with. On occasion we'll sit there and say, no, we don't think there's a value in it, or perhaps your values are higher than ours. But once we've got that agreement, we would then work forward to give an option to go to auction, which then means getting professional photography and start marketing and then end up at these wonderful locations.
And you go all around the UK?
All around Europe.
And Europe, yeah.
Yeah.
Tom, have you been around Europe these couple of months?
Edited highlights, lots of car admin, servicing things, and lots of faff to do with cars, just causing me undue expense.
It's admin, isn't it?
It is a lot of work. It's first world problems and no one wants to hear it, but it's a lot of work and it's all quite boring. However, I did go to Switzerland. I went to Zermatt for the first time, my second ever time skiing. With a watch brand, Oris watch brand, so lovely lot. That was good fun. I also did the BAFTAs recently as well, so God only knows who let me in, but I was there sniffing around, and a guy from Coronation Street actually came up to me and said, I watch your channel, ask for a selfie at the BAFTA nominees party. I was like, yes,
made it.
I love that.
Eat that.
Oh, brilliant. So, and are you a Corrie fan? You are now.
My mum is. I had absolutely no idea who he was, but he was a lovely chap.
Brilliant.
So there we go. Yeah, my mum would be impressed. That's probably about it, really.
Right, so should we get our boxing gloves on and try and work out which 911 is the cream of the crop? So I thought that what we would do is have a little sort of history lesson of the 911s as we go along, because of course Porsche is celebrating 60 years this year of the Wee car, which hopefully gives you a clue to the first question. It first appeared at the Frankfurt Motor Show in which year?
1963.
Good maths. And of course, so it was unveiled as the 356 successor.
Yeah.
But there was a little bit of history before that.
Well,
I
would say when it's the first Porsche, not a Beetle, realistically. Obviously, Ferdinand Porsche's father was part of the designation, designing of the Beetle through the war. Then obviously it came out of the war, that stopped, and he started his brand Porsche. Now that
Porsche.
It's like Nike and Porsche, isn't it? So of course a lot of those Beetle parts were used in that 356. And I always think of the 356, if you look at the silhouette, is actually sort of the first forecomings of a 911. Yeah. Now lots of Porsche people have many differing opinions on this, but it is part of its lineage, it's part of its history if you read through, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
So, and then eventually, of course, that 356, they rinsed away all of those Beetle parts and all became Porsche, and at that point they started to get towards 1963 and their holy grail, the 911.
Yeah, but it wasn't called the 911 to start with, it was called the 901. But why is it not the 901?
Peugeot had a problem with it.
Yeah, they did, because Peugeot had trademarked all the numbers with the O in the middle. And Ferry Porsche, who'd taken over from his dad in 1952, he picked the numbers 911, 911, because he'd already got that the typeface for the one, so it just duplicated the one.
Didn't know that.
Yeah. It's lovely, that,
I find it interesting, because obviously years and years later, they had the same problem, Peugeot, of trying to get they were doing the 007, and had to put a 1007 because someone else came in.
Was that the awful thing with the sliding
doors?
Yeah, but you could start this. Cute, though.
It was.
But also, you could actually drive it with the doors slid back.
Yeah.
Which was epic.
I haven't seen one for ages. Did they get banned or something?
Possibly.
No,
they
just fell apart. I don't know.
The French.
But I know. I remember my brother driving one up some road, and he said that somebody was giving him a bit of jip, and he just opened the doors and waved, and blew him a kiss. My brother blew this other person a kiss from the sliding door of the Peugeot. How many 901s left the factory before it was renamed 911?
Oh, I don't know at all. Yes. Actually, no.
82.
82. Really? So yeah. Those 82 cars must be really incredibly bad.
I know. Got a 901 over there.
I don't know. Have they?
I think it is.
Sure?
Yeah. Yeah. Literally, because they've got the display with all the 911 generations.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What we're going through now.
Wow. So they have one of the first 82. Wow.
Why aren't we doing it in front of them then? We could do a walkthrough of all those.
I don't know.
I tell you what. Follow us later on our Instagrams, and I'm sure we'll have a walkthrough.
Okay. So, hello, 911. 911 became, and we had a rear-engine 2-liter flat six with 128 brake horsepower, which doesn't sound a lot now, but in the 60s, 128 brake on something that was quite lightweight
I think I remember that there wasn't a great deal of wind tunnel work on this. It was that the 356 was incredibly wind efficient without any wind tunnel, and the 911 pretty much came out that same bit. It was very light, very agile, very turning, you know, it's just a perfect car straight off the bat. It was an amazing piece of design technology off the, you know, from a car that had come from very little beginnings. Although they weren't, of course, cheap. They were a lot more money than their cars around them, such as the E-types and so on and so forth.
And I do want to butt in at this point. I've got a little soft spot, embarrassed. There was the 912 as well, which was the 356 engine, give or take, chucked in the 911 shell. And early people who were driving both the 912 and the 911, a lot of kind of purists and drivers preferred the 912 because it was lighter weight, had slightly less power, and apparently it was less likely to pendulum, and it was less crashy, apparently. I mean, I couldn't tell you the difference between the two to drive them both, but apparently the 912, the early cars were more enjoyable to drive. And they sold more 912s than they did 911s. And that allowed them to get the funding together to then redevelop the 911 and make it better.
Better, yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, wow. Good intel there.
So there we go.
Yeah.
I can go now. I've said something useful.
You know, you stick where you are. Because in the 60s as well, we had the Targa 911 with the removable roof section. And you have
I have an 87 Targa. Yeah. So I think the early kind of the 60s and I think early 70s Targas were, a lot of them were soft windows. So it's basically sort of flappy canvas and a plastic kind of window that wouldn't survive in London for more than 5 seconds. And obviously then out glass, and a complete nightmare to fit and refit. And, but yeah, they're rare cars, the early Targas, really, really rare.
Also in the 60s was the 911T. Now we know a modern 911T as sort of like more basic. And this indeed, this 911T in the 60s, it was an entry level one for under 20,000 Deutschmark.
20,000.
So that was their entry level. Moving on, so any of those cars so far making it into your number one?
It's a bit like an E-Type in that the silhouette is always what should always be the silhouette. That simple 911 coupe is the sort of iconic design. But I didn't really, they didn't get the soul stirring, should I say, I'm swallowing my words now. They didn't get the soul stirring quite as much for me at that level, although it is the iconic start point.
Yeah. Okay, well, should we move on to the 70s? So in the 70s, we've got bigger engines, more power, fuel injection came, aero revisions, and I'm going to put my hand up here as a contender for best 911 ever, the Carrera RS, 206 brake horsepower, 2.7.
It's probably the most iconic 911, I think, and it still stands the test of time. It's still one of the epic collector cars. And at the time, it was incredible. From a sports point of view, you just couldn't beat it. It was an amazing piece of technology and engineering. And I still think, yeah, it's probably going to be... It's going to be tough to beat that for me for the best 911 that's been made.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
100%. That ducktail is just so iconic. And I was boring you guys earlier, so I went to the 50th anniversary celebrations in Paris with Tag Heuer, and there was about 30 or so of these cars, like just all outside this hotel in Paris, all in the different colorways. They are just so good. And I went out. There's a young chap who had one, went flat out on this thing down to, I can't remember, Le Mans direction. I was in the car, it sounded absolutely unbelievable. He was wringing this thing's neck, and
did you feel safe and secure? Did you feel?
I did, yeah. It didn't feel like a ropey old car. It felt like it was supposed to be doing that.
They were really, they lightened everything, didn't they? Lightened the glass, just about everything they could lighten. Didn't they then have an option for a comfort spec as well? Especially you could buy an RS and then they'd take it back to the factory and put some stuff on it, should you wish. Because it was so raw and so racy in that respect.
Not 100% sure.
No, but I always think if you want a softer car, go...
Go get it. Yeah, exactly.
Go and get something else. Now, in that era as well, in the 70s, there was the turbo came along with that lovely whale tail, 0-60 in 5.5 seconds in the 70s.
And the start of that turbo branding for 911, which became so important to them.
Yeah.
And it's still to this day, you and Tom drove one in the last video, and it's still to this day really usable, usable. I drove that home in terrible weather. Bless it, and it didn't miss a beat all that time.
And you loved every mile.
I did. I really did love it. Yeah, it was great. It was just stuck on traffic on the M25. It behaved, so it's not bad, is it?
That's really good.
Yeah, not much else I drive
classic
normally.
Classic cars and queues. Mm. We all know. We've all been there. Okay, for late 70s to the early 80s, through to the late 80s, we got the 911 SC came out. That was a revised 3-litre with 247 brake horsepower, which was just a little bit less than the turbo. And this really was the last of the original body shape, so there's plenty of special editions.
And we were saying, this is the era, I think, that just dropped away a little bit, and that values have always been relatively low, and they struggled to get themselves up a bit, whether it was because there was more editions and types, because people started becoming more aspirational to the top models, because that's the era that you've got your Targa, isn't it?
Yeah, I picked up my Targa for 40 odd grand, manual car, quite a nice car besides the rot. But I think, you're right, the impact bumper cars did kind of fall into a bit of an unpopular rut, and they're still relatively good value. If you compare them to the 993s, the 964s, and the stuff before it, they're still best placed value wise. I think they're going to have their time in the sun, very definitely.
You mentioned impact bumper there, and that was like an additional thing because of US legislation. They had to, you had to be able to bump into a barrier at 5 miles an hour and not...
Really?
And not...
I had real world experience of that. Someone on the King's Road reversed some Kia electric thing or Hyundai electric thing into the front of my car. It ripped the back of their car off. Completely their fault. I was stationary, I'd like to add. And my car was absolutely fine. And I was like, well, I got out and I applauded the car. I gave it a little pat and I said, well done, impact bumpers. So
brilliant.
There you go, don't reverse into an
H's 911.
Impact bumper 911 if you've got a new Hyundai.
But up to real world advice. Miles an hour, that was the, anything over 5 miles an hour.
Do you know what? It probably was about 5 miles an hour actually. Yeah, so fastest test.
Brilliant.
There we go.
No, in the towards sort of mid to late 80s as well, we also had the 959. So this could be a contender for you or not, I don't know. And this was built for Group B racing.
I think
the Group B competition that had finished by the time this car came about. So that got twin turbos, 444 brake horsepower, 3.7 seconds to 60 miles an hour. And at the time, it was the fastest car in the world.
It was amazing. I always put that aside from the 911s. I think it's almost a separate, it is, it's a bit like the Carrera GTs in the fact that it was that aspirational, I've got to be the fastest. Porsche battling the world to be the fastest car in the world in order to sell other brands. So I always, as much as I absolutely love that, I feel like I'd be cheating if I picked that.
Yeah,
I think I'd get shouted at if I chose that. it's got its own little code, like the Carrera GTs, not the 980, isn't it? So it's kind of...
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
So, okay, moving on to the late 80s to mid 90s, then we've got the Type 964. So we've got a new 3.6-litre, 247 brake horsepower engine, all-wheel drive in many of them. We've got a new interior and an automatic rear spoiler.
See, this era, albeit one of the cars in this era, the turbo, which I've got a real soft spot because of the bad boys moving the turbo and the wide-bodied car, but I've never really fallen in love with the 964.
Me neither.
I don't know why.
I don't know why.
I just it didn't quite work for me, and it almost passed me by, even though there were some fantastic incarnations. It just didn't float my boat. There was the RS, the RS Americas and things, but for me even now, and the prices are through the roof on them. They're really good news in terms of value, but just not for me. I don't know, I can't put my finger on it.
I totally agree.
I've never even watched Bad Boys, so I don't get the reference. I know that it was in it at some point.
Just ever watched it? Just watch the screen.
I don't know what I do, but it's not watching films on TV. I'm useless. Anyone reference, no idea. But I do like the RS seats on a totally different tangent.
Oh yeah,
the pastel seats with the different gradients. It's just so cool. It's only the seats.
It's funny how it could be such a fabulous car, but it just didn't quite touch it for me.
Well, one car that absolutely has done it for me and is a contender for me is the 993. So this was out from 1994 to 1998. This was a big seller, smoother body, the turbo got four-wheel drive for better handling. Yeah. Turbo S came later on, carbon ceramic brakes were introduced, and also there were homologated cars for various racing series, including the GT1 for the Le Mans class.
I was at 993 turbo was like one of my favorite cars. Yeah. I just, there's a Carrera over there. It's beautiful. And the shape's right for me. A lot of people say the 964, 993 are quite closely related, but for me, for some reason, the 964, not even close. The 993, the shape just seems to work that much better.
It's aging so,
it's a really
well.
Good car. The prices are through the roof, unfortunately, now, because that's the one car I'd love to buy and use as a sort of a nice usable classic. But they're just achingly gorgeous. They're the closest to me and the right 911 silhouette to the originals. To
yes,
me, that's it.
I agree, yeah.
Whereas the models got bigger. I just still really, really love those cars. And they are really valuable cars now. You know, a nice manual version is good.
And that's just before the 996, so they went water-cooled after that. So they were the kind of last
air-cooled as well.
I think they're unbelievable.
Yeah. That's the main reason I think for a lot of the values being so high, it is the last air-cooled, as well as lots of people's favourites. And of course, we go in ages. And so the age of that car is just starting to come into people having more money now, getting rid of the kids, and it's what they've always wanted. Unaffordable for me, unfortunately.
A Carrera S now is over 100 grand.
I know. It's crazy, isn't it?
Manual one, anyway.
Yeah. Oh. Well, let's move to, I think, perhaps the most disappointing shape.
Careful.
I know. Late 90s to mid 2000s, we had the 996, so this was water-cooled 3.4 litre engine, but in its favour, I think it got the GT3 badge and also the GT3 RS.
It started that top end, didn't it? It's made a big change in that. And I still think, I mean, it's ridiculously cheap. We've banged on about this a lot of time, and I should have bought one for £15,000 kind of thing. It's got lots of bad press about engine issues. It's had a terrible time recently in values. There were lots of them sold. Everyone refers to it as ugly. But ultimately, it's also the first ever, just as the 993 is the last air-cooled, this is the first water-cooled. So it again is a sea change in Porsche. It's going to be a really big marker in Porsche's history, which is why I keep thinking there's got to be a lot of legs in those cars.
And obviously, the headlights are it's the only time they deviated away from the oval headlight into whatever on earth you call that shape. So,
and you can also get away from the engine issues that everyone tells you about by getting the turbo engine or the RSs if you've got the
pockets. Well, you can upgrade the IMS. They don't have to be made of chocolate. There's so many specialists now that will upgrade things and do preventative work.
Yeah.
And even if it does go bang, rebuild's not that expensive. It's not sell your house.
Well,
there's so many people that do it now.
A good friend of mine who's a Porsche specialist, he always refers to saying it's all a bit of a faff about nothing. Because if you think about the amount of 996 Porsche that were sold, it's only because Porsche is such a loved brand that every time there is a problem, someone goes to war over it. But if you were driving an everyday Vauxhall Astra, if something goes bang in the engine, no one publicises it. It's all a lot of fluff about nothing. I think there's probably a bit of both in there, really. But they are incredible value. Not anyone's favourite, that's the bomb. Apart from the RS versions.
Yeah, well, if I was getting a 996, the only one I'd actually get for aesthetic pleasure is the turbo.
Yeah.
Because it's sort of
beefed out a
with
bit.
With the rear light bar and the wide
arches. You're getting the turbo without the turbo. But they're so expensive now, you may as well stretch to a turbo, I think.
Oh, 100%. I had one for a while and I did my utmost to pump the values up, so apologies. If anyone's looking to get into one and wondering why they're so expensive, I'd like to take some credit for
it's
that.
It's Tom Exton's fault.
I love the light because it was the GT1 car from Le Mans in 98, what did have the egg, whatever you call, fried egg headlights, whatever it was. And obviously the Metzger engine came through from that, so there is a lot of racing lineage in it. It does make some sense that it does kind of go through.
And those rear lights also were on the 993s, weren't they? And that's that nice, and it obviously carries all the way through now, so yeah. Still a bargain.
I like the 996, so I'm getting a little bit stressed out here. You're having a go.
Wait for the next one.
But are you going to have the 996 as a potential best 911 of all time?
Nah, I don't like them
there
that much.
There we go, move on. Okay, 2005 now to 2011. Oh, 997.
We've got to be careful because someone along the table's got one.
997. Now, it still shared some underpinnings with the 996, so which I should give a nod to and say thank you.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I have got one. I've got a 997 GT3 Gen 1.
Unreal.
And it is utterly spectacular. Old it may be, but for pure driving pleasure and the way it talks to me and connects to me, I love that.
That's still got hydraulic steering, not electric steering, right?
Still quite soulful, isn't it, in that respect?
Exactly.
It's visceral, but not life-ruining. You can actually drive it, but you can feel connected as opposed to your days being ruined.
Yeah.
As a generation, other than those RS versions, I felt they were a bit beige. I just think that as much as they went back, and actually I think maybe have been a bit of a safety thing, because the 996 was so... It got such a bad press for those headlights. It went safe, went back to the sort of standard shape.
Mm.
The lesser models are incredibly usable. They are really usable. They're unoffensive.
I understand when you say beige because they were so drivable. I understand.
I say, they're sort of almost like Germanic in their rooflessness almost. It was so efficient as a sports car.
Yeah.
But had lost some soul for me.
But then to get the soul, you go for the...
Go up and up and up and up.
Yeah, yeah.
And then to one of the cars I'd say is right up there with...
Oh, well, I might have to. Oh no, I'm still a bit undecided. But anyway, another massive contender for me of the 997 ilk is the GT3 RS 4-litre.
See, I remember having one of these for sale at auction during its first year when everyone was saying, like, this is the last naturally aspirated GT3 Porsche it's ever going to be. Everything else from now on will be. And it was the clamour around that car was huge.
It was the last manual one, to be fair.
And it was an amazing drive. And I regret not having the chance to drive one on a track. It was a customer's car. I had to be a little bit careful with it, obviously. But it is immense, that car. And it is right up there. It's got to be, you know, along the top. Top cars you could ever consider as a 911.
I've currently got a GT3 RS Gen 2 3.8. So this, to all intents and purposes, without the RSR crank or whatever the 4-litre's got. But I think in terms of something that you can use and actually drive without kind of worrying about, you know, your pension pot disappearing, I think 3.8 is still very well priced. You can buy a really nice one for like 160, 170. And the equivalent nice 4-litre is 400.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah. When it was new, it was £128,000.
Wow.
Today, you're looking about £480,000.
It's bonkers.
I know.
I think the 3.8 is the place to go.
Yeah.
I really do.
Good
Maybe
tip.
I'm being biased.
No, it's a good tip.
I adore mine. And out of all my collection, if I had, everything had to go, it'd be the last one.
Really?
Yeah, it'd be the last one.
If you can hear any car starting up noises, it's because...
We're at a car
Stuff's
show.
Happening at the show. And then, of course, just bringing things up to date for the 911, we had the 991, and then today we've got the 992. But
it's all a bit modern.
It's all a bit modern for us here at the Classic Car Show. So, go for it then. Let me have your final...
Mine's still got to be the Carrera RS. I'm just going to stick with that because it is the flag in the sand that really, really put them on, really put them in the mark. And, the, you know, it's made Porsche, I think.
Yeah. Tom?
997.2 RS, 3.8. I adore it. I'm so obsessed with that car. I just think it's the best. It's a great road car as well. It's actually really usable and livable with.
Yeah.
It's great. Manual gearbox, Metzger engine. Not too obscenely priced. I think it's just the best.
Which one?
I love the 2.7.
Yeah.
But I'm gonna have to put my money where my mouth is and go 997.
There we go.
GT3 Gen 1.
Perfect.
Well, there you go.
I know. Oh, it's difficult though, isn't it? They do make some yummy cars. Right then, let's just have a quick whiz around the show. Yes. So we've got a host of exhibitors that will cater for all your classic car needs, and we of course can cater for
most of others.
A new car, yeah, exactly. So there are many zones to visit, including the movers and shakers zones, where you've got things like iconic Porsches and iconic Mercedes, and then you've got barn finds, which I always love a section on a barn find, What Barn Finds has historically had over the
years? God, we've had a fair few, and they always make so much money at auction. Ludicrous money, really, but people like the story, don't they? They like to buy the barn find, restore the barn find, and then have that provenance.
Are you supposed to leave like the hay and stuff
on
them?
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
Well, I've never understood. Well, because clean it.
So people want to buy these cars, and they're creating the story. These are people that like the journey as much as they do the destination. So they like the idea of they got a catalogue when they purchase it, the car was pulled out of a barn, there's a story. They then fully restore the car, and then, you know, they've got that lineage of history as well as anything they've got.
So they keep the dirt in a box?
Every time. We have had once before where someone cleaned half a car, left half a car completely. That was
brilliant.
Quite fun. But we've had a Countach that was in bits out of a barn. Wow. I've had a Fassel Vega that, you know, made almost the same amount of money when it sold coming out of the barn as it did 3 years later restored. Which just shows you what people want to do with them. But it is, I think, a lot about the destination and also the provenance.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Big money in barn finds, it's crazy. We'll just back your car into a barn, throw some hay onto it, maybe.
I was going to say, the cogs are turning, my 912. It doesn't work out how I thought. I might just stuff it and get some chickens on top of it.
I'm a farmer's daughter, we've got a barn, you can chuck it in.
We'll do a deal. Put me up.
There's also a section on endangered species, which I always love, and things like the MG Metro. I am a former owner of the MGX Metro, so I have a penchant for those.
There's a reason why they're endangered.
There is a reason why they're endangered. About 120,000 were made originally. How many are on the road today?
Three.
How endangered are they? Wishful thinking in your mind.
500?
200, roughly 200.
That is pretty incredible.
And Porsche say, what is it, 70 or 80% of their cars are still on the road.
Wow.
MG can say 98% of our cars are
done and dusted
in a hole somewhere.
Yeah.
And there's the main stage over there, which both you and I are going to be on all weekend.
Yep.
Chatting rubbish.
Yeah.
I'm really jealous,
not rubbish.
Guys.
Yes.
You want to come over?
No, you're right.
No.
So we have got a lovely big sort of hosting area as well, with loads of people who will come up and talk about a variety of different subjects. I'm hosting it on Sunday, and Matthew is...
I'm on it on Sunday,
You're doing lots of stuff.
Be gentle,
I'll be hosting.
You'll be hosting me as
a
guest.
I'll be interviewing you.
Yes.
Ooh. Yes.
I've actually been banned, that's why I'm not doing it.
I've banned you.
You've had a word with the powers that be to not having him anywhere near me.
We've also got some fabulous birthday celebrations for manufacturers here. Not only Porsche celebrating their 60th, we have 70 years of Corvette, so we've got C1s, 2s, 3s, 4s, 5s, 6s, 7s, 8s.
Some great Corvettes, isn't there?
Really lovely display that. And 60 years of the Mini.
Mini as well, I saw that.
And he's got a great collection of Minis over here.
Yes.
I don't want to give it away on Philip, but you have to come and see these Minis.
I might give it away in the quiz later on.
Okay, then.
In a tiny bit. Okay, talking of which...
Quiz time.
Should we have the quiz?
Might
we'll do it. Right then, boys, no peeking. So I've just got half a dozen car-related questions with a connection to the London Classic Car Show.
Right.
Number one, when did Olympia open its doors?
Oh no, I've even used this on stage.
That's ridiculous. That is a ridiculous question.
You definitely weren't born.
I should have cheated. Then. I've got no
open its doors, I'm not sure of. I know I've had the recent conversations about the first ever motor show being here.
You're probably about 100 years.
Just assessing the architecture.
You're about 100 years.
Okay.
You would have been about 100 years old.
I can't count, you see.
Oh. I should put you out of your misery.
Go on, you're going to have to. I'm not going to guess it.
December 18.
1886.
I did try and help you there, Tom.
I can't work that quickly.
I'm amazed it's still standing.
Historics. Now then, we have got a fantastic DB5 at the auction. What Bond movies has a DB5 appeared in?
Oh.
Films.
What films?
The most recent there, Spectre. It was in Spectre.
Yep.
It was in... I'm counting back because I'm terrible at Bond.
Please do try this where you are watching and listening.
You've probably already got them, most of them. We're terrible at this, and Tom doesn't watch TV.
James Bond and the guy with the gun.
Golden Gun. Was it
Golden Gun?
Was he in Man with the Golden Gun?
No.
No, I didn't think so.
Is that actually a thing?
Yeah, the Man with the Golden Gun.
Oh, Golden Gun.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Salamanga.
Oh, this is terrible. We're going to be shot down in flames on this one. But what? I'm terrible with Bond movies. I think I shut off to them because Mark just bleats on about DB5s and Bond movies all the time.
Should I run through it then?
Go
Please
on.
Do.
Goldfinger, Thunderball, GoldenEye, Tomorrow Never Dies, Casino Royale, Skyfall, Spectre, No Time to Die.
Tomorrow Never Dies.
TND. according to my research.
Is it in all of them?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of cameos.
Exactly.
Lots of cameos. Yeah. So they've been using them. Was it the last movie where it was doing donuts in the I looked at someone and said, there isn't been a DB5 ever that's been able to do that.
I wonder what was underneath.
I think it was a BMW.
Yeah, it was a BMW
3 Series.
Okay, now then, at the auction we have also got an amphibious car.
Yes, we do.
We have.
Yes.
And that has even been on a lake towing a water skier behind it. How cool is that? Oh. I have driven an amphibious car.
Have you driven? Yeah. Or have you...
Oh, I don't know what you call it. What do you call it? Yeah, you drive a boat.
Yeah, I suppose, yeah.
So yeah, I have driven one. More of which in a moment, but Richard Branson has got a connection with an amphibious car. What is it? And it's to do with the same car that I drove.
Thomas is not going well. I've got no idea.
How?
Oh, I've pulled him out of the bag this week.
What? I've seen one of those duck boat things.
Oh, what?
That
right?
Oh, that's the tourism things.
Yeah, that's the idea.
Yeah. We had a duck.
Is that the right answer?
The historics team had a duck. We went on the Thames. Sorry to digress. I don't know how or why
you
we did it.
One of those.
We didn't have any knife jackets on. We got out of it. What on earth did we just do? In the middle of winter on the Thames, we went in, went out, and suddenly thought, that was a bit sketch. We probably should have thought about that a bit more. But it was just because it was a fantastic piece of kit.
Contact your trade union or something like that. That is not right.
If you do go to the water, please wear...
Please, yeah, all please of those safety it. Features.
Yeah. And Richard Branson. So in June 2004, he set the cross-channel amphibious car record.
Not in an amphibious car.
Yeah, in an amphibious car. Yeah.
Blimey. We needed Mark Perkins on this, didn't we?
That's why it's called the cross-channel amphibious car.
Clues in the title.
I think the problem was, Tommy, that Mark Perkins was definitely due on this quiz, because
so
these
Perkins
are his
is the
questions.
Head, his, yeah, he's the head of historics.
Yeah, and he's obviously just blanked us. And he would have got all, he got all of the Aston Martins.
1 hour, 40 minutes and 6 seconds. That's pretty speedy, isn't
that's
it?
Really speedy.
P&O kind of level, isn't it?
The car was called a Gibbs Aquada.
Good name.
That was it.
Yeah.
Gibbs,
was it right?
Yeah, Gibbs Aquada.
Okay, let's see if we can do any better with number four. On display at the show are three of the four Radford Mini Coopers that were owned by the four Beatles, and they've been reunited here after 55 years. Three of the cars are here. One is no longer here because it doesn't exist. Which Beatle did that one belong to that isn't here? You got 25% of getting the right answer.
I'm sure Lennon's cars.
What did you say?
John Lennon.
Oh, correct.
Is it?
Yeah. Oh. John Lennon's cars didn't make it.
Oh, well, yeah. I guess that one's really
something
well
to do with him.
Although, the way I just mentioned it, so you have that one.
Yeah, I don't know anything about the Beatles or Minis, so good.
Okay. right. There is a display Formula One car here. I have not seen it yet, but it is here. Which team is it from? Have you seen it?
No. They've been hiding that well.
They have. Okay, I'll give you a clue. Pierre Gasly and Esteban Ocon.
Oh, Alpine.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
I went to the launch of their car the other week in Printworks.
So we've got Bahrain testing at the moment.
Yes.
The first race is next week. Yeah, so tell us about the launch.
It was fantastic. I had to shoot somewhere else, so I didn't actually do the full thing, but they actually dangled a Formula One car from the middle. I don't know if anyone's ever been to Printworks. It's like kind of a rave place. My back hurts even thinking about it, but it's very loud and there's lots of
it's worrying when you're the youngest.
Where loads of cool people go. Yeah, those days are behind me, but apparently where all the cool people go, but they dangled this Formula One car from the ceiling. They revealed it like normal and they had the drivers and everything talking around it and blah, 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 but sort of the party bit at the end. This thing was just suspended. Above. I don't know how they did it.
But without an engine, one presumes.
I don't know. Couldn't get up there, but it was, it was life size.
Oh,
yeah.
Lovely.
Ridiculous. So well done, Alpine. That was the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. That's how you do it.
Ooh, car alarms.
Car alarm. Right. Final question.
Yes.
So, clinging on to our Formula One theme, name all the new drivers on this year's grid ahead of the season. Yeah. Let's go.
Nice snappy quick-fire questions.
Okay, who is new for McLaren? He's an Aussie.
Oscar Piastri.
Yes. Who's new for Williams? He's American.
I'm really relying on you here, Tom.
If I say yes, officer, does that help you?
No.
Logan Sargeant.
I wouldn't have got that, actually.
Okay. No.
There's an AlphaTauri driver, Dutch, Formula E champion. Kind of rhymes with French fries.
Nick De Vries.
Yes. I said kind of.
Looks like it.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, and that's it.
The same as rhyming.
There we go.
Oh, that's it.
And who do we think then this year? Is it going to level up
Max.
Again? You still think that?
Max is just an animal.
I don't know whether though Mercedes are sandbagging a little bit. They're playing coy.
Early doors, isn't it? It'd be lovely, I think, for a Brit, if Lewis could get his eighth, but who knows?
I don't think Merck will stuff it up 2 years in a row. I just think they're one of those teams that just won't, and they've got a plan B car, which is copying Red Bull and Ferrari, if their no pod systems
doesn't
rubbish
work.
Again.
Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah. Oh, that's good insight.
Oh, it's exciting, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. It's good. It's injected the excitement back into it. I want to see George do well.
Yes.
I'd love to see George
Lewis
do well.
Lewis must be fuming. George is so good. He must be absolutely livid.
But I feel like Lewis is almost like a test driver at the moment because he's so experienced. They're testing things on him thinking, you can make this work. But then, of course, if it goes wrong, he just looks like the mug that can't beat the rookie. Mm. But actually, it's because the rookie's good enough to be stable and Lewis is that good at developing a car.
Yeah.
It would be a waste not to use him.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, he had a tough time last year. But
no one else? Ferrari, no? Not near?
Maybe
they flattered to deceive last
year.
They
don't have the pace, but their strategy will probably be appalling again.
They'll
ruin everything.
They do a big madness on the strategy.
There's a few new people there, so who knows? Who knows? But that's the wonderful thing about F1 and about live sport.
All motorsport as well.
Yeah, exactly. And they've got about a billion races as well to fight over it.
Yes, exactly.
Poor drivers. Yeah. I don't usually feel sorry for sportsmen being paid millions of pounds, but actually that is a tough game.
A big slog.
Is Las Vegas this year as well? Is that the first year this year? Yeah. Oh, love to do that. I'm not sure I'd get to see the race. I'm
trying to get myself there.
I'm sure you are, Mr. Exton. I'm sure you are.
if anyone's watching.
Worming my way in.
Right, well, that is it for this edition of the Historics podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. We hope that we have enlightened you, entertained you, and hopefully not bored you too much along the way. Please come down to the show. The auction is with us tomorrow. That's Saturday at 12 o'clock. You can bid online or in person, but you do need to pre-register to be able to bid. And if you would like any more bits and bobs from us, I'm going to hand you over to Tom to tell you how to get it.
Thank you very much, Vicky. Thank you very much for tuning in, everybody. Obviously, this podcast is available on YouTube and all your usual streaming platforms, but we also have an Instagram account at Historics, where you'll see all the cars ahead of the next auction nice and early, so you get a sneak peek and a little heads up of what's coming, so make sure you're following on there as well. And also, follow on YouTube, subscribe, and all that usual stuff, and then you will not miss out on our wonderful comings and goings and various car shows and auctions throughout the year.
And as well as tomorrow's live streaming of the auction event, we will be back in cars again shortly, ahead of the Ascot auction, which is coming up not too distant future, Easter, 8th of April. So please do stay well tuned. We're going to be driving cars again. That'll be good fun.
Yeah.
I'm excited to see what you found for us to drive. The bar was set quite high
last year, so
no pressure.
Yes. I'd like a barn find in a suitcase.
I'll send you a list of what I'm after. So
That's
thank
right,
you.
Yes.
I appreciate that.
Oh, lovely. Until next time. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.